Welcome to Black Blood Hills, brought to you by NMDP. NMDP manages the world's most diverse blood stem cell donor registry. Tune in each week as I share tools and resources on ways you can be a change agent and save a life in your community.
Welcome to Black Blood Hills. I'm your host, Tamara Weston, and today I am joined by Carla Dawson. Carla is the program manager on the health equity team at NMDP, and today we're going to talk about access to transplants and services offered by NMDP for searching patients and patients that have received a transplant. Welcome, Carla.
Thank you, Tamara. I'm glad to be here.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good today.
Good. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you were able to join me. Thank you so much. Let's just, you know, I'll give you an opportunity to tell us about who you are, and then we're going to talk about all things NMDP, that the resources that they offer for searching patients and their families, and just give the audience a little bit of information. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
All right. So let's go. Tell me about yourself.
So as you mentioned, I am the program manager on the health equity team. And our team focuses on really ensuring that all patients have equitable access to transplant and to the resources at NMDP. And so we partner with internal people at NMDP, and we partner with external persons to ensure that everyone has a fair chance at transplant and that we're not unintentionally excluding any populations in their journey to transplant.
Awesome. When we talk about equal access, are we talking about anyone that's a searching patient, or is this particularly for patients that are headed into transplant, meaning they already have a donor?
We're talking about anyone that's a searching patient. We're talking about anyone who may potentially get a diagnosis of something that can be treated by transplant. And so we're thinking about it big picture, because there are people who don't even get to the search stage of things. And we want to ensure more people get there. And then for those who get a search, we want to ensure they get all the way to and through transplant.
Awesome. Can you tell us a little bit how that search begins? Like, how does a searching patient become a searching patient?
Yeah. So typically a patient would be with their community provider, so like their primary care provider or oncologist, and they would get that diagnosis and then be referred to a transplant center who would do either the search at the primary care office or at the transplant center. And so that search goes into our system and we become connected to that patient. And then that's at that point, we begin to do some outreach and get to understand where that patient is and then plug them into the resources that NMDP has.
Awesome. So we really in partnership then, when we talk about partnerships for that part of the process, who would be some of our partners? We're talking about the practitioners.
Yeah. So we're talking about some of our community providers or hematologists or oncologists. Our transplant centers are a huge partner in getting connected, getting people connected to NMDP, because they allow us to do outreach to their patients and send out packages of hopes to their patients.
Okay. What exactly is a transplant center for my audience that might not know?
Yeah, so a transplant center is a healthcare institution, or it's usually part of a larger system that can perform bone marrow transplants or other cellular therapy. So we have transplant physicians, nurses, and others who just work to ensure that patients can get their bone marrow transplant.
And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, and if you can speak to this, there's not a transplant center in every city, right? Sometimes searching patients have to travel.
Yeah, that's correct. In a lot of major cities, there is a transplant center, but other areas that are more rural, or for whatever reasons, there aren't as many resources, patients do have to travel to get to their transplant.
And is there a cost to them when they have to travel if they're a searching patient?
Absolutely. Most of the time, like, insurance is not going to cover your travel to a hospital or your hotel stay or Airbnb. So it is a significant cost to even get to your appointment. And then if you're doing the transplant, the time you have to stay there, it can be really big.
So then when we talk about access to resources, is that some of the things that we have ability to help people with, or are we involved in policies that will help to enact legislation that will help searching patients get provided with the resources to participate in a transplant?
Yeah, I would say from the patient support side, we do have grants that are able to help patients who need assistance with transportation to the transplant center, or they need housing prior to transplant or even post-transplant. So that's a big part of what we do, patient financial assistance, and people can apply to get that money directly to them.
It goes directly to them and
directly,
not to the hospital or to the provider.
Directly to the patients so they can use it how they see fit.
Oh, okay. And then in terms of when we talk about health equity, what do we mean by that?
Yeah, I think there are a few different definitions of health equity, and most of it focuses on everyone being able to achieve their highest level of health. I think Dr. Cameron Jones talks a little bit more of the process, and it's more about the assurance that people can achieve it. And so it's about the process and ensuring that we have a responsibility to really support groups that have historically and currently been left out of this process, and fitting in resources that are specific to the needs of the individual or the group, and not trying to do it like one size fits all. And so I think high level, it's ensuring that our resources are really addressing where the needs are, mm-hmm. and not so much what we think.
Yeah.
But within that, there are other areas. It's not just about recruitment. It's also about access to even finding a donor, correct?
Mm-hmm.
It's also about, like you said, working with or going to appointments, work, or even just getting on the registry in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
So how does NMDP make sure that everyone receives equal opportunity?
Yeah. I think I would just start with a specific example of the sickle cell community.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where a lot of my work lies. And we would hear time and time again about people not being told about transplant as an option for sickle cell disease, or if they decide that they do want to pursue transplant, there are so many barriers to getting there. And so I think NMDP really did a good job of listening to the community and then creating action. And that action looked like first big awareness campaigns to ensure that people know that transplant is an option. And I think that was tied in with recruitment, knowing that, hey, we want people to know about this, but if someone wants to pursue it, they need a match on the registry. And so we need more people on the registry to reflect that. And so we partnered with Oryx to raise awareness. And then once we got that part rolling, we looked at our services. How can we serve this community specifically? So we hired sickle cell navigators that's specific to that community. We created grants like the fertility preservation grant for sickle cell disease. And I think it was this partnership between NMDP, the community, transplant centers, all coming together to try to fill this gap that we're seeing. And we're not there yet by any means, but I think that's what we try to do across the board, like really lean on the needs of the community, listening to transplant centers and other stakeholders so that we're baking equity into all of our work.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're right. We're not there yet,
yeah.
Right? There are many areas where there's opportunity for growth, but that's with every corporation.
Mm-hmm.
That's with every organization. I think as we evolve and you expand on your, not only your resources, but your research, which we have done as well, you find bigger pockets of areas where you can sort of grow and fill in that gap. And NDP is being very moving forward in terms of stepping up their research, stepping up their legislation pushes, being in front of Congress and proposing new policies that allow people to be able to feel comfortable even trying to get a transplant.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you think about a transplant, people think about, I had to, you know, miss time from work. I had to leave my family. You know, I have mortgage to pay. I have bills to pay. So all of that rolls up into being able to feel comfortable about getting a transplant. I think NMDP has done a really good job in regards to making sure that those initiatives are pushed to the forefront.
Yeah.
Something I also want to talk back. Can you go back? You mentioned that there was a doctor, I think you mentioned her name, that can you give a little bit more about what that was?
Oh, I was just, when we think about the definition of health equity, Dr. Cameron Jones, she's just a leader in the public health field and the health equity field.
Okay.
And for a long time, it was more about the attainment of the highest health for everyone, which is still what we want. But when she talks about health equity, she frames it as a process.
Okay.
And so it's the work we're doing. So we're assuring that everyone can get to their highest health, or we're breaking down systems or creating policies to ensure that people can get there. So it's that assurance and not necessarily that we've arrived. Because I think things will always shift, and what's health equity will change over through the years.
When you think about COVID, you know, even though it's here to stay, but not as detrimental as it was a couple of years ago, it's here, right?
Yeah.
It has shifted the world and how we know it, right? Yeah. There's we were going one way and COVID just said, nope, stop. And we had to go another way. We had to pivot.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about the uneven practices within ethnic cultures mm-hmm. for medical professions, do you think that that plays a role on health equity? And if so, how?
Yeah, absolutely. I think COVID was one of the things that really opened people's eyes to the disparities that we see within the healthcare system and within our communities and society. I think we saw an example of that in who was dying the most from this disease. And there was some degree of, okay, it's who had some of the comorbidities. But what that means is that we have to be targeting specifically populations who are most at risk.
Right.
And not trying to lay something across the board that, in general for everyone. And so I think what it taught us is that there has to be specificity and understanding that populations are different and have different needs. And if you're gonna save people and give people access to healthcare, you can't just do it one way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a really big lesson.
I think so, too. And I think it opened up everyone's eyes when we looked at the numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again, you had, when we think about health equity, you had some people that were able to stay home or that were able to work remotely.
Mm-hmm.
But you had, a different segment that had to go into work
mm-hmm.
because they just couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
And they had to take, in an urban area, they might have had to take public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
And that just helped to, put it out or spread.
Yeah.
And then you had people that maybe worked outside in a group and that helped to spread it. But they didn't have the resources to, they might not have had the resources to be able to go in and get, either the vaccine or get the medicine or mm-hmm. get anything that would help prevent them from getting it.
Yeah.
Even down to PPE, mm-hmm. Going out just unmasked or ungloved or just exposed, if you will.
Yeah.
So when we think about access and health equity, are we in a good place where we feel like we've covered those initial onsets of danger?
I would argue no. And in what you were talking about, who had to go into work, when you think about the demographics of that is mostly Black mm-hmm. and Brown people, that is people in lower socioeconomic status. And so you didn't really see a transition from that even through the pandemic. Those people still had to go to work and they still had to be some of those frontline or essential workers. And so I think we haven't figured that out. We also haven't figured out the messaging, because I think there needed to be some adjustment in how we talk about the vaccines, depending on which population we talk to. And I think there's lots of work being done so that something like this doesn't happen again, how we roll it out and who's able to not work. But there has to be a major shift in society, because supermarkets are going to have to be open and they're going to want those workers to work regardless.
Yeah, stations, fast foods,
yeah.
All of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Okay, well, then going back to transplants and making those accessible and just, I guess, known. One of the things that we've talked about is a lot of people don't know,
mm-hmm.
right? A lot of people are not aware that transplant is a possible cure.
Yeah.
When we think about how do we... through the partnerships that we have and that through the partnerships it's trying to build,
mm-hmm.
how do we continue to grow and build the awareness of that?
Yeah. I think it's partially just staying in the community and just reminding people. Because you said, you don't like to say that it is a cure. And that's a feedback that we heard from the community that allowed us to change our language about how we talk mm-hmm. about transplant for sickle cell disease. That's a big part of it. But our big thing is... we want everyone to know what their options are.
Absolutely.
We would never want to gatekeep someone's potential treatment because we think it might not be the right fit for them. We want them to know what it is. And we also want them to know what it is in a timely manner. And this is not just for sickle cell disease. Black patients are less likely to be referred to transplant, or they're referred at a much longer time frame than non-Hispanic whites. And so... we have to be thinking about all these things, that we're not pushing a treatment on anyone, but ensuring that they know, and they know in a timely manner. And then if they do want to pursue it, they can.
Well, let's shift a little bit. What inspires you to do this work? Because I know it's not easy to change people's minds, right? If it's not in the forefront, if it's not affecting the masses, then it doesn't get as much attention as it should. A lot of times we've heard that African-Americans who are suffering crises will go into the hospital, depending on what age they are, if they're an adult, and be accused of just being there because they want drugs.
Yeah.
Right. So now it becomes, okay, I'm in pain, but you're saying that I want drugs and I've not shown you that I'm a drug addict or that is the case. So when we think about how do we change that? Like, what drives you to want to change that?
Mm-hmm. Honestly, it's my daily interactions with warriors and caregivers, or even just hearing their stories.
Who's warriors?
Sorry. A warrior is someone with sickle cell disease. And so when I'm able to really understand the gravity of sickle cell disease, that it's not just pain, it can be strokes, it's lots of hospital visits, it's Christmas and Thanksgiving in the hospital. And so I think just getting to know warriors, and despite all of that, their resilience and their strength, and the way that the sickle cell community pushes for everything that they need, because transplant isn't the only space where there's need. There's need in primary care, there's need in mental health. There are so many other spaces where we see disparities or lack of access to care. And seeing them do that work makes me want to be a part of the work to help where I can.
I love that you call people with sickle cell warriors, because it is a fight, right? It's a struggle every day. And you're right. It's not just trying to get to transplant. It's actually just trying to live an everyday normal life without a pain crisis, without, you know, having to be in a hospital, without missing school or work or playtime.
Yes.
So, yeah, I like that. I like the word warriors.
Yeah. And definitely not mine. That's a name the community gave themselves and coined, and something we just use because of that.
Well, the community knows. They can
absolutely
speak it.
Yes.
Now, when did you learn about stem cell therapy? Like, when did you first hear about it? Before you started in your role, did you know about blood cancer and blood disorder diseases or stem cell therapy?
Very briefly, before I was at NMBP, I did also work at a cancer center. Okay. And so, but that was more like solid tumors. And so I wasn't very familiar. I feel like when I entered into this space, it was like a rush of information every single day, learning how this works, who this affects, and where do we fit into the space. And so I've been here almost 3 years now, and I still think I have so much to learn. So, so much to learn.
I'm right there with you. Same thing. I've had to learn very quickly and still learning. And I think that that's what makes every day not only a challenge, but just an experience, a good experience. Mm-hmm. You know, it's learning something new, figuring out how to save lives and making a difference.
Yeah.
I think we still learn every day because NMDP is still doing so much every day. Every day there's something different. Science, you know, I used to say digital media or digital space is like a beast because you can't control it.
Mm-hmm.
It changes every day.
Yeah.
And that was because I was in a corporate setting. And now that I'm in a nonprofit setting, science to me is now a digital beast, is a beast, because science is always something new.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about how fast things move and how fast things change and how you have to be able to move with it,
yeah,
or else you'll get left behind.
Yeah.
And you won't be able to progress. And with NMDP and all of the pillars that they cover and all of the support that they give, I'm glad that we are able to talk about not just recruitment, but what it takes in addition to recruitment to get someone to a transplant process.
Yeah.
So I you know, I'm with you. I'm inspired. If you had anything that you wanted to say to the audience in terms of not just about recruitment, but just in terms of helping people reach health equity or access, what would that be?
Yeah. In thinking about transplant specifically and the work that NMDP does, I would just urge you to know that you're not alone, that we have a patient support center that is here for patients and who wants to support you every step of the way. And that's in financial assistance. That's in community. We have groups that meet together to talk about their diagnoses. And just knowing that there is support for you out there, and we're trying to meet your specific needs. And when I think about health equity, I know there is so much more work to be done. There's continue to be differences in outcomes for Black people who have blood cancers or blood disorders, and we're working on it. I'll let you know that we are working tirelessly at NMDP in research in our patient services to ensure that we won't see those disparities anymore and that everyone will be able to achieve their highest health and to get a cure for their disease.
We had a previous guest talked about mismatched unrelated donors.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that and what NMDP is doing and how we're growing with that?
Yeah. I won't talk too much about it because I'm not the expert in that space, but I will say that currently when someone gets a transplant, there are a few different ways that we do that. We have our match unrelated donors. We have match related donors for someone who has a match in their family, or haplo-identical donors. That's someone in your family who's like a half match. And so what we know with mismatch is that it's going to open a whole new world of donors for people. And so you don't have to be that 8 out of 8 match necessarily. You can be a 7 out of 8 and still get really good outcomes for transplant. And so as we get that work underway and continue to see developments in that, I'm anticipating, or we've been told that that 29% is going to go way up.
Yes.
And so I'm excited to see those changes.
They're going to take the best match possible. So that could be a familiar member, which we've talked about, is a 30% chance of that happening. It could be an unrelated donor, which of course would come off of the NMDP registry, but then it could be a haplo, which could be a parent.
Yeah.
It could be a parent. So there's opportunities. They're expanding the opportunities.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we still need more African Americans to join the registry. I never want it to be said or thought that, oh, you don't need me to join. You have different options.
Mm-hmm.
We do. But the best option is always to have more than you need, right? So let's have more African Americans on the registry so we give African American census patients more of an opportunity to find a match, the best match for them.
Yeah.
Sounds good?
And I think what I love about the mismatch unrelated or the MMUD is that now if we get the barrier of donors out of the way,
mm-hmm.
we can do a lot more work in the other spaces, ensuring that
Absolutely.
People get to transplant.
Just make sure that before I say that, for advocacy from our medical partners, is that a strong unit that we find with NMDP? Like, are some of your health practitioners, are they strong partners in
yeah.
terms of getting people information and resources?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we have a lot of transplant center physicians or
okay.
even community physicians that do a lot of work to ensure that people know about transplant in general, but the services that NMDP has for patients.
Okay. And then, of course, as we change our services, they'll be able to update the patients with that as well.
Yeah. And we're always listening and thinking about how can we better serve the patients.
Mm-hmm. And I love that we continue to say it's all about the patients because it is, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
All right. Well, with that, Ms. Carla, I think we are good. I hope that we've given the audience a good bucket of information. And again, if you're interested in learning more about NMDP or stem cell therapy, please head over to our website, nmdp.org.
Thank you for tuning in to Black Blood Hills. Head over to nmdp.org for more information on how you can join the registry and get involved. Make sure you subscribe, share, and tell a friend about Black Blood Hills.